runner and co-executive producer of The Beaverton, Jeff Detske, but unfortunately he's taken ill to the flu, which has captured way too many people these days, so he couldn't be here with us. However, we have these three amazing individuals to have what I hope is a unique and interesting and somewhat thought-provoking conversation of what it means about fake news and satire and the like. So Miguel, let me start with you.
Sure.
Do you consider The Beaverton to be fake news?
No, I consider it to be satirical comedy. It's not news really at all. It references the news, but I'm as many late night TV hosts would before me would say, I hope that people aren't getting their news from us and they're coming to us for commentary on the news they've already consumed.
I think it's a very good point because so much of what you guys do is rooted in real news. It's just done in a manner by, I don't know who was dancing back there.
Miguel made me drink before this, so I'm just kidding. My little mic here.
No, I just said, sure, go to the bathroom. That's
right.
All.
Well, that's drinking, so no, I'm just kidding.
Emma, it's a big responsibility, though, even, you know, providing news, even if it is in a satirical fashion. You guys still have to be on top of everything.
Yes.
You still have to understand, you know, the backstory of something if it's a provincial issue
yes.
or a municipal
yes.
issue. So a lot of time and effort and energy still goes into it, but I would submit that I think even just that much more goes in because you need to make it funny.
Well, that is very kind of you, and I agree a little, although I think the journalists have a very difficult job as well. I think for us, what we've learned in the past 2 years is that often it's important that, especially with the more severe or intense or touchy stories, that the story is complete. Because it's difficult to satirize something that in 2 days could become taboo. So there were a couple of stories where just the fruition, the sort of the journey of the story hadn't peaked and sort of wrapped up. So we felt like there are certain things that are just, I think that the more touchy stuff definitely needs to be complete. And we feel a responsibility with that. And then for the most part, as long as we are punching up, not punching down, mm-hmm. anything goes. That's sort of where we come from.
All right, Luke, well, this brings a good question for you as the co-creator of this. What sort of drove you to say, this is what we need in this country? I mean, this happened in the United States, mm-hmm. but the Beaverton has, you know, really pivoted from being not really well-known to now, heck, you guys are here.
Thank
welcome.
You very much.
This was the end goal. This was, we're done.
As
thank
it should
you.
Have been.
You
and
I mean, I think it was just always, for anyone who you know, grew up watching The Daily Show like I did, I think there was a certain love of, you know, as Miguel said, you don't want to get your news from that, but there was a certain love of adding that to your understanding of the world. Mm-hmm. And especially when you're, you know, kind of developing your political opinions and your critical thought, having someone who, like Jon Stewart was able to for many years, kind of make sense of what seemed at the time to be an, you know, insane world, and it's only gotten more insane since then, was very useful. So I always loved that power that satire could have. So when we started the website, I mean, you know, I would never have thought we'd wind up here or with our own TV show. We just wanted to make each other laugh and make our friends laugh, and then it kind of grew from there. Mm-hmm. But it just kind of came from that same idea that, you know, comedy has this, and satirical comedy has this power to it. And it's when you're able to kind of figure out how to do it yourself, it's mm-hmm. a joyous process. And yeah. we just kind of wanted to get in on it at whatever level we could get our hands on it.
Wonderful. If I just remind the audience, if you want to follow along with us at Twitter, if you like what we say, tell your friends. If you hate what we say, tell everybody. It's hashtag CJF Talk. So please follow along. I want to ask you one more question, and then I have we have a lot to discuss. How did you come up with the name Beaverton?
That I can't take credit for. That was developed by Laurent Noonan, who is the original founder of the website. I came on very shortly after he started it. And I never fully asked Laurent that question, but the understanding I got was he wanted something that was a combination of very Canadian and very dumb. Because he just liked that kind of, that satire of, you know, our logo is a beaver with a top hat and a monocle. And he just kind of liked that fusion of the very silly with the very smart. Mm-hmm. And so I think it was Canadian, you know, with the beaver, and also just like the dumbest name he could think yeah. of.
He succeeded.
Yeah,
succeeded.
It's really dumb.
It's dumb. Oh, yeah.
Emma, a lot of what you do is, half of it is, it's about the delivery. You know, you have to be deadpan in a way. What inspired you to present in the manner in which you do? I mean, I think of sort of the Saturday Night Live when they read the news, things like that. What inspires you?
Yeah, that's a great question, because we definitely try to find our own voice. So there's things borrowed for sure from SNL, and obviously there are predecessors, 22 and Air Farce. But I think the thing that we wanted to do with this show was have it almost, if you're going sort of through the dials, or, you know, if you're going through the, you could almost miss that what we were saying was so insane. Mm-hmm. So as close to the real thing, and less of a slow tee up to the joke and a sort of like, if you don't get it. So it's almost like if you're not listening, you'll miss it. Mm-hmm. For a lot of reasons. I think the pace is nice. A lot of sort of shows that have been in the same vein have just had a bit of a slower pace, which is great. Mm-hmm. It's a large comedic landscape. There's room for everybody. And I think, yeah, our show wanted to just bump up the pace and have that more, a little more realism and a little less goofy.
Yeah. Miguel, you also have interaction on the show with what would be field reporters. Mm-hmm. You know, they're out there presenting, doing a local story, for example. What amount of preparation has to go between, you know, what you're at the anchor desk and someone's out there? Is it all scripted, or is there anything that is just off the cuff?
There's room for play and some off the cuff stuff, but the nature of our show is that we're wading into difficult water sometimes, and so we can't just fully kind of riff out bits. They kind of have to be pretty well thought out what the main joke is going to be. But then, luckily, Toronto has an enormous comedy community that's really untapped, because there's not a lot of jobs in the TV industry or film industry.
Right. So, it's not like the newspaper just gagging for people to come and
could shoot a cannon down my newsroom these days, not hit us all.
So I'm lucky enough to have come up in the Toronto comedy community. I know a lot of the people, and everyone is excited to be on TV. And we're, you know, Beaverton has the cream of the crop to pick from. Mm-hmm. So people come in, and you can trust that it's people, even though they're not on TV, they're not very green, and they're super funny, and you can trust them to handle the material. And we also pull from that same group for our writers, so you trust in the material and the voice.
Yeah, absolutely. How much input do you get into the writing of it? Do you come up with your own ideas as well?
It's sort of
or
a combination.
Luke just say, no.
Yeah, Luke just said, you shut up. You know, and they start crying. No, but it's definitely a combination. The stories break so quickly, and because we tape Mondays and shoot Wednesdays, we're often getting, I would say, 40 to 50% of the show on the day.
Yeah.
So the only time there's ever been a real is if there's a word or a sort of trajectory of a story or an angle on a story that we feel uncomfortable delivering in that way. And there's a very collaborative, I feel very safe, you know, and really supported. Except for Luke, who's just a tyrant. Bad person.
Yeah. Clearly. That's what happens when you go to UCC.
Look in his eyes.
That's what they teach you.
Look in his eyes. Your high school didn't get a mention. Like, you went to just as an elitist high school, right?
I went to Hogwarts as well. So,
But you were in Slytherin. Though.
Exactly. Yeah.
Luke, is as the editor-in-chief of the website, do you find, I mean, you have the ability to just stay on top of everything, regardless of the fact that you're not shooting anymore, as you just recently wrapped up. Can you think of a time, however, though, from the time in which you started production and shot the show, did you miss a big story in between? Was there something that you felt, damn it, I wish we taped on Thursday instead of Wednesday?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those ones where it could have gone bad if we had been able to shoot on it, but as I'm sure everyone recalls, Patrick Brown's press conference
that was a Wednesday
was happening literally as our show was airing. So you know, not only did it hurt our ratings a little bit, but also it meant we couldn't comment on it for another week. Now maybe there's an advantage to that because, as Emma was just saying, that was a story that had so many moving parts to it, and we didn't really know 100% what was happening. I mean, we knew there was an allegation. We knew he was making the statement at the time. He wasn't resigning, and then, of course, he did the next morning. So that was one where it was a little bit like, shoot, we missed it. But also, you know, let's say hypothetically we'd been able to cover that, but with only, like, you know, a third of the story kind of in to that point, you know, there's a chance we would have made some wildly inappropriate or totally wrong joke that just didn't reflect the facts on the ground. Sure. So yeah, and we, you know, with anything that happens, you know, after we film, before we air, there's always that, like, oh, well, we just can't do anything about that. I mean, there's no way, you know, there's no way to literally, like, storm the Bell Media, you know, satellite system and replace an episode.
I never thought of that.
I mean, I've considered it. Yeah. But so that was the biggest one this year, where it was just like, oh, well, there's nothing we can do. But also, might have been for the best, at least for the quality of the show. I mean, I'm sure it would have boosted our ratings.
So that's a very good point, which brings me to my next question then, Miguel. Is anything off limits?
I don't think anything is off limits as long as you have an angle on it and something to say. I think just saying something for the sake of saying it is a trap. What you want to do is really be able to put some sort of spin on it that draws attention to an area of it that you feel is not being covered. Mm-hmm. So while you are trying to be funny as the primary goal, you do have to have that sort of purpose in mind. And I think that it can apply to any subject, but obviously certain subjects are much more difficult and should only be approached by someone who actually has something to say about it.
I read some of the stuff that you have done on the Me Too movement, talking about a sensitive and a particular issue. Emma, how do you feel that you guys handled that? Do you think that it was fair? Do you think that people were
If I may
critical?
Cut in here.
Oh, God, right?
Yeah. I'm sorry. We don't want people kind to interrupt this. So.
Yeah, no, we definitely were proceeded with caution because the goal of the show is not to be didactic. The goal of the show is to present an issue and have a spin on it. Mm-hmm. And so I think... on something that is so important and so prolific currently, I think we did it. To be completely honest, the thing that was the most difficult about it was the amount that it was coming up and the amount that we had to produce that were going to be original. So if there were four Wednesdays in a row where another allegation had happened or somebody had been, you know, there'd been another one that had gone down, we had to come up with a new way, an original way, a new joke that, you know, wasn't going to be desperately offensive, wasn't going to punch down, was going to honor the right sort of way. So that was, I think that was the biggest challenge with that. But I'm really proud of the way we handled it. I feel really good about every word that I said.
Well, certainly know that no one's off limits. They've taken a few shots at myself.
We take shots
at everybody. Very enjoyable. But of course, the Pope was prominent on the website today. So really no one's off limits.
Oh, come on. I mean, if we're still like, the Catholic Church can do no wrong. I think that bridge was crossed a few years ago.
Yeah. No, this one's a cool pope.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
He's the cool pope.
He's so
He's
true.
The cool pope who still is opposed to all the things we believe in.
Yeah.
You should ask him for a guest spot on the Beaverton. I think he would do very well.
And now
those ratings will go through the
roof. The
pope!
Bit of a snore, maybe.
Renewed for 5 seasons, though.
Oh my God.
You'd have the Catholic contingent watching you guys.
Our fan mail would
and
change.
And we could go to heaven? That'd be
and we could go to heaven! Oh my God!
Ooh.
So let's talk a little bit about that. Your favorite targets, certainly social conservatives, I know that.
Yes.
Anybody else other than, I mean, obviously politicians, they're the most, you know, easy to poke fun at. Corporations, usual left-wing stuff, yeah?
No, I mean, I think our show and as an extension of our website is best when we're pointing out hypocrisy. And so, yes, there's a lot of hypocrisy in corporations, not necessarily for being corporations or for being people who are interested in, or organizations that are interested in making money. I mean, that kind of goes without saying. But, you know, I think the biggest trend over the last 2 years with advertising for corporations and is, you know, wrapping themselves in the flag. Mm-hmm. And so Tim Hortons has been doing that for, you know, forever, but, you know, it's gotten even worse. So I think that was a thing that we made a lot of fun of.
And not even Canadian-owned anymore.
Pardon?
Not
yeah, exactly. Canadian. Yeah, Brazilian-owned Burger King, Tim Hortons, or whatever. So I mean, I think that's a fun thing to go after is just corporations kind of going so out of their way to be patriotic. So that's a big target for us, but also...
Which is against the Constitution, by the way, too, in America. You're not allowed to wear the flag or use it to sell anything.
Oh, right, with the...
That's all I was
What about those bikinis?
Hey, they're cool, but they're not
allowed.
They
have a Buy America concept, too, now, so I think they're being a little bit lax.
New amendment on the way.
Miguel, is there a time when you're coming into work and you know you guys are going through your taping process and you're like, we have to do this. This has to be done.
Yeah, I think for us there was a huge change coming into season two, which was that we block shot season one in advance of even the first episode airing. And I know what you're thinking, like, wow, a current affairs news program writing stories 8 months in advance. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it was a problem for us for season one, and luckily for season two, like we said, we started taping 2 days before. So on the very first taping, Paul Manafort was indicted, and we had all these scripts that didn't include any of that, and so we just were unsure about how it was going to operate on the first day of taping, where it's like, I think we have to talk about Paul Manafort being indicted. And I remember being like, we have to do that. And then everyone was like, we are.
Yeah.
It felt great.
So it almost feels like a live breaking news sort of story when, yeah. you know, when you're, even though it's going to air.
I remember when Charlie Rose, the allegations about Charlie Rose came about, we referenced it and in our live studio audience, it had happened that day. And you could see our whole audience go, what? Like they had literally hadn't heard about it. It's the closest we got to breaking a story. Yeah.
There has been kind of a fun, you know, like element to season two of like, you know, I love in the movies when someone like is rushing copy down three floors to get to the, you know, teleprompter or whatever. And we the fact that we actually got to do that even for our own silly little comedy show was a real fun tribute to like, the, you know, the journalism movies
That's
of
right.
old.
The old school way of doing things. Absolutely. The literal stop the presses and someone gets to hit a giant button. I have a button that. It's pretty fun. I don't have a button.
You guys still use those like metal plates from the
post,
right?
We believe anything. Just tell us and we'll believe.
I get to hit send. Emma, I'll ask the same thing I asked Miguel. Something that you feel so passionate about or was like, you know, this is what my friends are talking about. This is what's going on in my world.
Yeah.
Does that contribute to things that you want to present as in an editorial?
Aspect? Yeah, I think I think the Me Too, the feminist take on stuff, I think it's just important and representation is important. And I'm passionate about that and I wanted to talk about it and I wanted to distinctly not shy away from it.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's two of us sitting at the desk. One is a boy and one is a girl. And I wanted to...
Which is which?
Well, that's...
Don't ask.
Yeah. I did want to...
We're not allowed to anymore.
Yeah, exactly. But, yeah. So, and I got a chance to do that. So, I'm happy about that.
That's very exciting. Is there anything in your personal lives that help contribute to how you present it? Or, I mean, obviously... being a woman, obviously that helps.
Yes.
That's very helpful.
Yes.
But other things. You know, being in the media world, sometimes we live in glass houses and we are in a bit of a bubble and we don't talk necessarily to what real people are really genuinely feeling. How do you sort of get the temperature of the room, so to speak? What do you do to do that? Other than social media, which is an echo chamber.
Right.
I think social media can be an echo chamber, but for the Beaverton specifically, online engagement is actually really important. And to Luke's credit, the website has always done a really good job of being very available to speak to fans. And I think that for me, that sort of has been the best resource for what's really going on out there in respect to how they view our show.
You guys think becoming parents changed your comedy and your delivery?
Oh, it's so great to be out. This is like
very
the best party
all
I've
the
been
time,
to.
So yeah, I stopped thinking
Emma's
about
a new
stuff.
Mom. Miguel's a new-ish dad.
New-ish.
Yeah.
Luke's about to be a
about
new-ish
to be. That's
parent.
That's why I'm asking. No. I want to know if my comedy's about to change.
It's going down the drain.
Great. I don't think
My recommendation? Get someone else to write all your jokes.
Yeah.
Maybe it gives you better perspective, I think.
I think so.
And more desire to actually make fun of things and have fun in life.
Yeah, and maybe being a part of a show like this that's topical, that's sort of taking on current events feels slightly more cerebral than being in the basement of a bar wearing wigs, which we did for a decade. So that's nice.
I'm doing it tomorrow. Yeah,
I'm going to that show, I think. Yeah, so that's nice.
Just by way of anecdote, when we first arrived, we just all met for the very first time. And it's very clear the three of you have an extraordinary chemistry with one another. And I think that matters, especially on a show like the type of show that you do. Luke, I'll start with you, but I want to hear all of the answers. Do you ever turn it off? I mean, the three of you are very sarcastic. You're very funny. Mm-hmm. Do you ever turn it off?
Thank you.
With your spouse, your friends, or is it always just like part of who you are, a little bit of an edge? And
There's a little bit of it, but
Luke,
no,
turn
I,
it off.
I, yeah, thank you. I'm so big
Luke,
compared to Emma.
Turn it off.
There'd be constantly notes from Emma like, Luke, take it down. I do because I, even though I do live in an echo chamber and even though I do have very hard opinions about things and I love, you know, pointing out when other people are wrong and would hate if someone were to do it to me and all those things, I do have, you know, I practiced it as a lawyer for 6 years. Mm-hmm. So I do have a lot of friends who are, you know, still in that world, obviously. And so when we go out together, their opinions on things are vastly different from mine. They're usually much more conservative. Mm-hmm. Depends on the issue. So a lot of times... not that I'm studying them or mining them for materials, but a lot of times I just shut up and listen. Like,
right.
Because I don't, you know, when I'm hanging out with my comedian friends or my writer friends, you know, or my leftist friends, like, you know, it is a little bit of like, yeah, I agree, and like just us talking in a circle. So I do kind of enjoy having, you know, being a bit of a fly on the wall to people whose opinions are just incredibly different from mm-hmm. mine. So yeah, I will just kind of be the quiet guy around a table a lot of the time mm-hmm. just because I like hearing other people's opinions. And then if they say something horribly offensive, I might go, what? but then I'm just back to being quiet.
Yeah, right. Emma?
Yeah, I think personal life is big. I've had the same partner for 12 years. I have the same friends since I was 18. And so there, if, you know, they sort of see through the BS, so there's not really an option to sort of, and I think with Miguel, it's interesting. I think I could speak to this, that we, you know, at 8 o'clock on Monday night, we're on. So, but Miguel is, you know, a wonderful father and has a lovely wife. And so that's usually when, at the beginning of the day on Monday, we'll come in, how's your, what's your kid do? Look at this video. And it's really just, and as the day goes on, we just sort of, until 8 o'clock hits, and then we're up here. So it's definitely, I don't know if it's intentional, but we just sort of start to go, 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 go. And then once the show's done, we literally sit at a bar for 2 hours and just sort of go like this. And it's just like sort of this roller coaster. And I think, and you've done television, that you know, you sort of have to have a comfort with when to amp up and when to come down. And the come down is very important, I think, in having a grounded, although you have like comedian friends and writers for leftists. I have like two friends. I like two friends. So anyway,
How about for you, Miguel?
I think what's interesting is that the way the show is built comedically is a very classic kind of straight man, silly person kind of vibe, and so Emma gets to often be a bit more wacky, dare I say, and I'm a bit more buttoned up and sort of straight ahead. And in real life, I'm not like that. Like, I'm a giant idiot and goofball, and like pretty much all the time. I was gonna say some sort of thing about turning it off when I'm like doing real things, but it's not. I talk to people on the street all the time, and like too much. I'm.
Yeah, what do you mean you're talking to people?
Yeah,
on the street?
Yeah. The recognition has amped up this year, and I feel a need to like have lengthy conversations with everybody, and because I'm just like, do you know me? And they're like, I really have to get going. I was insulting you, if you remember. So I never sort of turn it off. And then when I'm on the show, I feel like I'm like more straight-laced than I am in real life, to the point where some guy came up after the taping and was like, man, I had no idea you were such a cut-up. I was like, I'm odd that you came to see me tape
and
a comedy show.
And he sort of sits like this. The second the camera stops rolling, you know, he's like, that's inappropriate. And then he'll be like, whoa, you know, it's two different people.
So I turn it off when I'm on the show. It's weird.
Yeah, at some point we need to make a super cut of all the horribly offensive things you guys have said to each other when we called cut, but we were still recording. And there's some really, really dark things.
Mm-hmm. Emma's been telling me about the same rash for 2 years.
Since 2007, can't get rid of it. It keeps coming back. A lot of medical stuff.
Yeah, well, same deal in other newsrooms. Things that end up on the floor, oh boy, I'd get sued a lot. Which, do you? Do you get sued?
Ooh. You know what's interesting? On the TV show, I think people are just so used to TV comedies being able to do whatever the fuck they want that they haven't.
Yeah.
On the website, especially when we first started, oh yeah, people were trying a lot. Coffee Time really doesn't like us.
No, Coffee Time hates us.
Because
Tell why.
Well, we wrote this story. I probably shouldn't say the headline. We wrote this story.
What's the headline?
implying that Coffee Time.
It. There's freedom of the press for a reason.
Yeah. Anyways, we wrote this story implying that Coffee Time was so, you know, I can't remember the exact wording. It was implying
coffee
that
time
Coffee Time
was so Coffee Time.
Coffee Time was so Coffee Time that an employee was dead behind the counter for 5 days and no one noticed. Just because it's Coffee Time, and then
how dare you laugh at that? I'm gonna sue you. Man.
Yeah, and so we got this very angry demand letter, and assuming quite correctly that we were just a bunch of idiot kids who would, you know, buckle under the pressure and do whatever they wanted, but obviously not knowing that I was a lawyer, I'm sure. So I just turned
These
around.
These guys love Coffee Time. Yeah. Oh no! Oh, no, they're going now. Enjoy your coffee. Do they're dying there.
Do a post check.
Bring us back a Coffee Time.
No, actually, don't.
No,
do not.
It's good.
Take it,
coffee
throw it away.
Time, not so, bad. So you used your legal.
Yeah, I threw my legal
your
email.
Your legalese right back at them.
Yeah, and then never responded. They just went ice cold silence, and I was like, okay.
Nice.
Yeah, it was a really fun, like, You know, I pointed to, I mean, the new law had just passed.
Sure.
So, you know, supposedly protecting parody and satire,
yeah.
As well as all the other fair comments and all the other stories of Coffee Time being Coffee Time. And just threw a very long email together, and then it was like really looking forward to the response, and then they just never gave me the satisfaction of we withdraw our complaint or that's whatever right. it was, which I wanted so
yeah,
badly.
Yeah, we're very fortunate we have a wide berth in this country to be able to mm-hmm. say things that we can and with fair comment laws and things like that. But does it ever worry you, Emma? Like, do you think, oh, shit, we just crossed that line?
Yeah,
oh, dear.
I mean,
my mother's going to be calling me.
Well, my mother doesn't really get the internet, so that's great. But there's been a couple times when I've just thought, like, I just, because of my son, like, if they come at me on Twitter, like, yeah. I don't want, like, some of the stuff they say is so mean, and if, you know, if he
people
ever
are horrible.
Reads that. Yeah, but I think who cares? So that's where I live, in the, oh, what if, you know, he sees this horrible thing about his mother? Well, they're wrong. So, yeah. And the type of person, you know, that's, so I think I don't care.
I think when you choose to be an actor, so many actors are like, oh, I never wanted to be famous. And it's like, but it's obviously understood as part of the agreement. If you're very successful, public life and notoriety will come with it. And on this show, we sort of entered into a devil's arrangement where we use our own names, but we're not ourselves at all.
Right.
And so there can be some level of confusion where people think I'm not a cut-up or yeah. something, or they're like...
they're like, I'm like often in jail.
I'm such a cut-up.
Like, yeah. Someone tweet, Miguel is a cut-up, and
hashtag Miguel is a cut-up.
So we're always aware of, like, when is the thing when people are, when, like, the troll armies are going to come yeah. after us? And
season 3.
Yeah, right? It hasn't happened yet, but it's on the horizon.
It might not happen to you guys personally. It happens to the Beaverton account.
That's the beauty yeah. of the show, weirdly, is like people feel that the brand is more responsible for something they don't like.
Right.
They only comment about our appearance and perceived sexuality.
Yes.
That's all we get on the
yep,
social media commentary.
That's all we get. Yep.
Emma yeah. didn't mean what she said, but she does look
yeah,
not how I
so
like.
She's so fat. That guy's gay. We're like, okay, this is great. Yeah.
But I'm not coming to your house.
I just print off the horrible things that people say to me, and I put them all. I have my wall of fame in my office, and occasionally read them while I take a shot.
Oh, that's a good
it's
idea.
Very helpful.
Can yeah. I come there?
Yes, you can.
Okay.
Friday afternoons.
Oh, I'll be there.
Do like one per bad comment? Potentially
I
risky.
I think my Friday night ends.
Sunday morning.
Yeah, basically. No, I do have to parent in there sometime. Are there things though that when you think, okay, we're doing, you know, someone's going to really, really, really be pissed off by this. Someone's really, really going to be offended by it. We must do it. Or is it, we must do it this way?
That's Luke's MO, I think, a little bit. Whenever we do tapings, there's like, you know, we make the show for what we make, but we judge a lot of it on how it's received received live and,
right.
oh my God, that got so many laughs. Whenever a piece would get, we would yeah. all be like, wow. And Luke would be like, yes! yeah. That's what I want.
The thing that makes Luke sweat terribly, like that gets him like just really, really irate is puns. Like, we can be doing oh, a very God. Sort of nerve-wracking Me Too, something that is this going to go this way or this way, but if it's a pun, he's just they're like, oh God, we're better than this. Freaking out back there. That's pretty funny.
Yeah, we did one, I have a rule on the show, we can only do one pun an episode, which okay. sounds like it should be easy. But if you've met any comedy writer, all they want to do is write puns all day. Even really good shows, like there'll just be so many puns if you break it down. So this one pun rule really gets bumped up a lot. So finally, basically, we had on the second or third last episode, I said, fine, because we had this one segment that was written by the hilarious Nilu Honda, which was just all puns, and it just kept going and going and going. It was the one about the library opening
oh,
up streaming service.
Yeah.
And so I was like, okay, fine, get them all in, and mm-hmm. then we're not doing any more puns the rest of the year. So we just did like, probably like a minute and a half of just puns, and I was like,
yeah,
great, and we're done.
Okay.
But in terms of like what Miguel was saying, because I find like so much of comedy nowadays, and not to criticize anyone, but although that's what I do all the time, but not to criticize anyone, but you know, so much of comedy is clapter, which is like this great term that Seth Meyers invented, where it's like you're laughing a little bit, mostly you're just clapping because they said something you agreed with.
Right.
And don't get me wrong, we have that on our show where we say things that you know your average liberal, left of center, 33-year-old or whatever would agree with. But I like doing the opposite, and I like saying something that punctures that bubble and makes them go like, whoa, what? And I mean, not to say like we would do anything that's like, you know, overtly offensive just for the sake of being offensive, but if we're still accomplishing our goals and being satirical and punching up, mm-hmm. and it can also be something that makes people, you know, gasp with shock, then that's, yeah, that, like Miguel said, that's music to my ears.
Now, you guys tape in front of a live audience, correct?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And has there ever been a time when they just are like, oh.
Oh yeah,
like you could, like, oh, yeah. Literally, the air is left out of the room.
We shoot more pieces than we air for this very reason. And so yeah, recently we were, you know, you try and find angles into every story, but some stories are too recent, particularly tragedies. Right. Our show, you know, something that's obviously an ongoing problem is gun control and gun problems, and it happens so frequently, and it's so in the news cycle that I think people expect us to sort of comment on it. And sometimes you try and find a way in, and then you say it in front of people, and you're like, that was a closed door.
What did you do where you were like, don't make, because we have these earbuds where the director said, okay, we're going to do it one more time, and there was one story recently where the audience was just like, you know, no, no, and Miguel's like, please don't make me do it again.
And I was in the control room being like, make him say it again. They haven't screamed in pain loud enough.
No, I don't like it.
Do you meet the studio audience after? Did they talk to you?
Yeah.
Did they tell you if they loved it or hated it right away?
I feel like no one has...
Because obviously you pay them to be in that audience.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, no one has the gumption to come up and be like, I don't like you.
No, there was that one day where we started and he went, if this is your comedy, that's going to be a long night. And we were like,
but that was because...
Okay.
Where he was, right?
Yeah, right there. I was like, what are you doing here?
Our audience warm-up started talking to him and he was like, don't talk to me. And then she was like, well, now I have to talk to you. one more question, and then he just like clammed up, and then it was like lights down, and then he made sure to say that really loud. Yeah. We were like, okay, you probably should have left that guy alone.
Yeah.
Didn't he come up to you afterwards, though, and say really
like, I got the photograph with both of you individually and together. We're like, okay. And then it was bizarre.
And we're like, no, do it smiling. We're like, we would.
Like, smile.
He was like, now do it looking at me angry.
Yeah.
We were like,
yeah, that's right.
Sure,
that's
man.
What happened. Yeah.
I'm going to get a little corporate with you. Mm. When you first presented to put this on the network, were they hesitant? Because, look, big companies aren't necessarily willing to take a risk with a business or a show that, you know, really leaves no sacred cow unturned.
Mm. That's a good question.
It's a great question.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, all of them have been so good. That's a great question, and honestly, the answer is no, not at all. I mean, from what I've gleaned from Bell Media execs is that they were kind of waiting for a show like this because, not to bring it full circle, but when Rob Ford and the scandals were happening,
they didn't have... Do
you know Rob Ford? I'm familiar with his work.
He's a guy, okay.
He has a brother.
We sold a lot of front pages, I can tell you that. Rest his soul.
But they didn't have a comedy show that could comment on it. I mean, there was 22 on CBC, obviously, but the fact that American shows were... you know, covering the scandal and there was
flying
no,
him down there to be on the show.
And there was no, you know, Bell Media, you know, Comedy Network show, and the Comedy Network being the home of The Daily Show and being kind of known for Canadians for The Daily Show and Colbert and now, of course, Samantha Bee as well, you know, that was kind of why they wanted a political satire show. So when we walked in the door, they were, not only were they excited about it and into it, they wanted us to go further than we ever thought they would. We've never gotten a note really of, ooh, that's an area we don't want you to talk about, or, and you know, to their complete credit, never have they been like, don't go after this company because they advertise with us or anything like that.
That's fantastic. Because, you know, you always hear anecdotal stories about, you know, The Simpsons, of course, being on Fox. They're constantly making fun of Fox, but Fox has never really tried to shut them down or change anything or Family Guy or anything like that. So I'm just curious if that was your experience at all. And I'm actually heartened to hear it's not.
I mean, I would love to be that, you know, that David Letterman figure where he's like, oh, the suits at General Electric are just ruining it. I would love to have those stories. I just don't have any. Literally, the last meeting we had with them as we were kind of wrapping up the season was, you know, the final note was like, you know, that was amazing, but I think you guys could go even harder. And we were like, okay, let's do it.
Emma, when do you say, you know what, screw you, I'm not doing that. That's the worst ever. Stupid idea. Not funny.
Not funny. I hope this isn't too controversial. The first time.
Oh, no, this is a private meeting.
Okay, great.
Being live streamed.
Right, good. No, but the very
nobody
first.
Nobody blog about this.
This was in season one. The very first time we sort of tried to handle, it was the rape statistics in Sweden versus in Canada. And it was just about, which was a very difficult thing to make fun of, but I think they did it really well, and it was sort of just pointing out how the stats are inflated to the benefit of the country looking good, and it's not sort of a true reflection of what the numbers actually are. Which was great, but I just thought the word itself was a lot and constant, and it can trigger some people. And I just had an honest conversation saying, like, I think this is going to, the jokes are going to get lost in the weight of this word and what it means. And it's important to say it, but there's got to be other, blah, blah, blah. And we had a long meeting, and the rewrite was exceptional. There was no questions asked. It was like, absolutely, we're all on board with this. And the piece, it's hard to believe, but the piece is funny, and it hits the right note. It's sort of coming from a place that we think is right. It's pointing out an issue, and it was a piece I was pretty proud of. So that was a one where I went, like, can I say something?
I think we also have gained confidence, Emma and I, over the two seasons to just be like, that ain't funny.
No, you're an asshole.
And if we do that, to Luke's credit and the network's credit, they're always like, okay. Like, I remember probably 4 or 5 weeks ago, we had the closing piece of the show was coming up, which is our like point counterpoint kind of sketch style that we do. And we just were like, this doesn't work. And it was like 10 minutes till we were taping, and then we were like, we didn't even know we could do this because it was so far along.
We don't
I don't think you want to do this. And then Jeff just like, who's not here, just like ripped it up. He's like, you don't have to do anything. We were like,
okay.
Oh, yeah. You just feel this responsibility being like the host of the show or the lead of the show
of
that
course.
You want to like make sure everyone's
face.
Work is being
well, recognized. Well, in actors, we feel like we can't really bump against lines, right? We should find a way to make it work. It should come out of our mouth naturally, but this isn't, you know, lines in a script in a fictional show. This is like, I mean, I guess it is that, but it's with issues that are a little more important than, like, I don't know.
We just want our show to be funny.
Yeah. You know?
We just want it to be really funny.
Well,
so if it's not,
I loved the clip
so.
That we played. That was probably my favorite.
Oh, good.
Ever. had you two met before?
Yes.
Yeah. Emma and I have known each other for at least 10 years.
10 years, yeah.
But we did many shows together. In different groups and stuff.
Like live
shows. We were never actually like a pair working together or really in-depth working together until this show, but it was really great to hear that she was cast because I knew she already didn't like me, and so I didn't have to try and earn anything.
I just don't like him.
That automatically works.
And that's fine. It's work. It's not your life.
I don't care for it.
So making your life and Jeff's life a little bit easier. Isn't
them not liking
two.
Each other?
Yeah.
That's helpful. I mean, because we
that.
Can divide them, you know what I mean? Like other shows, they unite, and then like the show, like over time, the cast gains all the power and the writers lose the power. But if you can divide the cast,
absolutely.
The writers keep all the power.
The cameramen are with me. I got the cameramen. You want to look on TV? That's talk to me.
Just a reminder, if you follow along with us on Twitter, it's hashtag CJF Talk. And in about 10 minutes or so, we're going to wrap up our formal discussion or informal discussion and open it up to the audience. So I hope that you have some riveting questions, especially for Luke, who has an obscene amount of knowledge on William Lyon Mackenzie King. So,
ooh.
Yes.
No one's going to ask about that, I bet.
He knows a lot about that. So open the Wikipedia page and try to confound him.
There's a guy in the back like, finally!
his nickname was Bill.
Is there a time when you sort of look at what you're doing right now, you know, I don't see it happening, but what if they come to you and say, okay, forget it, you guys are done, you're canceled?
Oh,
I know.
Well, tell the story.
Here's a real funny, goofy gag that's just nothing but funny and hilarious. Is we were in the writer's room back in March, and this is just so funny. The thing about it is how funny it is. And you're gonna laugh real hard when you hear this. I had an audition for another project, and I slipped away at lunch, and it turned out to be the day that we got renewed for season two, but it was coming down to sort of a crunch time whether or not we were gonna be renewed, sort of. And then I went to the audition, and me and Emma, you know, frequently were like, hey, I wonder what's going on with the show, back and forth all the time. And then so I'm at this audition, and she texts me, oh no, the network showed up like bad news, like it's bad news, it's really bad.
I wrote,
and I was like, really? Like, confirmed? She's like, yeah, you better, like, come, you better rush back here and we can, like, make a plan or some shit. So I was like, oh, fuck.
And just if it wasn't clear, we'd found out we'd been renewed while you were at the audition.
Yes,
like,
everybody knew
that we were losing our mind.
And we're like, I have a way we can amp this up even more. Let's tell Miguel it didn't happen.
So then,
like,
then I got in the car to go from the audition to the writer's room, which is probably about 15, 20 minutes. Due to traffic, took well over an hour.
Yeah.
In which
way
I called my wife and told her that the show was canceled.
They have a daughter. She's new.
And the energy in our room is progressively getting lower as we realize how mean that was.
And everyone's like, is this still going to I'm like, yeah, yeah.
I imagine every 3 minutes, one writer going, no, it is funny. It is funny.
It is funny.
It's funny, right?
It's funny because it's not us.
And then when I showed up, and they were like, just kidding.
We're kidding. And I said, he's like sweating. He's like, you call my wife. I was like, oh.
I didn't even. I just was like somber. I was like, oh, okay. That's actually a good thing. This is a good day. when I journal about this later, it's going to be positive.
But if we do get a season 3, I will try and do it again. 100%. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, I can't imagine you guys not getting more opportunity to do. This is so much fodder out there. There's so much going on everywhere and anywhere in every corner of the world. I know President Trump is like literally helping sell New York Times and New York Post. Washington Post has helped their subscriptions. But we don't quite have that right now in Canada. Mm. We don't have that equivalent. Even though I personally think some of the things that the current Prime Minister says are a bit goofy, but it's not quite as it doesn't grab the world's attention.
Right.
So how do you?
I think he's more famous than any prime minister in my lifetime.
Well, his socks, yeah.
But whatever the reason, he does grab the world's attention way more frequently than I think. If you ask the average American during Harper's prime minister, while he was prime minister, a lot of people, like the regular person, would be like, Harper, Happer? Like they would have only the vaguest understanding. Whereas Trudeau, for better or for worse, for wrong or right, is a pretty bona fide celebrity, yeah. I would say.
But you want to make fun of the government too, though, right? Mm-hmm. You want to make fun of their policies. I mean, you're a policy wonk. You know this stuff. You want to be able to sort of rip those sorts of things apart.
And they've been giving
really
us a lot more for that.
I haven't really seen that yet.
Well, I think Trudeau reflects something that Luke loves to destroy, which is Canadian smugness, where we think we're better than everyone mm-hmm. all the time in every single area. And so I think one of the Beaverton's aims and successes has been puncturing that bubble to be like, no, take a good hard look at ourselves in all kinds of areas. And I think Trudeau's celebrity sort of comes with this stereotype of Canadians are exactly like this and it's only good things. Mm-hmm. That's obviously not true. And so him being so prominent and us able to attack him for that sort of hypocrisy lends itself well to commentary in the country.
So let me turn the question around a little bit then. What do you want to do more of?
Ooh, that's, I mean, again,
great
question.
That's a good question.
So complimentary. I think, you know, second season certainly had the theme of the Me Too movement. It almost started like a couple weeks before we premiered and obviously ran throughout the course of the second season. I'm very interested to see where that goes. Obviously, we've already seen the backlash to that build. So I think there's going to be a lot of powerful satire to point out in that world. Not that I want more sexual harassment to happen, obviously, but more openness about what's been happening for years and changing that system would be wonderful to both see and comment on. Mm-hmm. I do think one thing that's going to be very fascinating over the next year is how Andrew Scheer attempts to define himself. Mm-hmm. Because I think he hasn't succeeded so far. I mean, he had that very derided commercial of, hey, Andrew, how's it going? which was, you know, you could satirize, but it was already a satire. It was like the Kelly Leach video.
wow.
So
do the work for you.
Yeah,
oh my
exactly.
God, what was helpful. That?
So what I'm very interested to go at is how both him and Singh, but especially Scheer, attempts to get people to actually like him instead of just not like mm-hmm. Trudeau. And so I think, you know, if we're fortunate enough to get a season 3, that'll be a big thing because we'll be ramping up towards the next election, of course.
And same with Jagmeet Singh, I would think the same answer.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah, I mean, he's almost charted a course where he's Trudeau again. He's an international celebrity and he has very interesting, you know, wardrobe choices and he's very cool and he's sexy and everything else. But we already have Justin Trudeau. So it's like, how are you going to differentiate yourself from mm-hmm. Justin Trudeau in that way? So that'll be fascinating to watch. But frankly, I think it's going to be also a question of the Liberals are really, they're becoming a scandal of the week type government, which a first term government, you usually don't see it as much. Usually that's a second term.
Yeah.
So scandal of the week kind of stuff, which they, you know, maybe you could say they've pulled themselves out of a little bit, but it's still happening a lot. Yeah. Even stupid ones like People Kind, which is a bad joke or whatever. So if they keep doing that, then that becomes a huge thing to talk about as well.
One of the things that I certainly noticed watching the Beaverton is you guys do make fun of us being Canadian, you know, and being, you know, our curling, throwing, hockey, playing, Tim Hortons, sipping, you know, nice people. Emma, is there something that you would like to do more of in the next little while, and you know that maybe not necessarily. I mean, it's a national show, so you have to be cognizant of that. But I mean, Toronto has a raccoon problem. Wouldn't you just like to like, do a whole show based on what a raccoon says?
I'm obsessed with raccoon stories. It's like we're kindred spirits, but I just think that we have to be so cautious about, first of all, like Toronto-centric stuff.
Yes,
because there's
exactly.
Obviously, hopefully, most of the nation
is
watching.
Hates, so
but you know what I love? If we're just gabbing, I would love to do streeters. I'm a big fan of those streeters where you just go into the crowd and
harass people.
And no, but sort of, you know, use people on the street. And I think there was that incredible thing Mercer did with talking to Americans. But I think we could do that here, and that would puncture our bubble a little bit. Like, it's not Americans who are just stupid. We are just as stupid. Yeah. And we can, you know, we can acknowledge that sometimes we're not these sort of witty, perfect hippies that we like to, with the exception of you, that we like to sort of portray ourselves to the rest of the world. And there's room for that. So I think, but I don't network and blah. But I think, yeah, there's a lot of room to puncture ourselves. And I love that we do that. And I think we could definitely do more of that.
There you go.
I think what I would like to do more is episodes, seasons.
Being employed.
Yeah, and I mean, I say that as a joke, but I'm such a cut up. But I feel like that it's actually sort of, it's sort of true where I feel like we sort of only found ourselves strongly footed in season two.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we really were getting into a stride as the final few episodes came around. Mm-hmm. And it felt like, oh man, I want to talk about everything. And like you said, the news has never moved faster in terms of what people are aware of.
Yeah.
So our show, most news shows cover 8 to 10 stories an episode. We cover 18.
Yeah.
And
even that clip, it's too slow. Pick it up.
Do you get a lot of suggestions from people like, oh, why don't you cover this? You should really do this.
Yes.
Constantly.
Yeah.
I had a brother in a lawnmower. You should do that.
It's very serious stuff, though, or is it always like my stupid crazy cat video?
Wait, it's a lot of, you know, funny, cute, small town stuff.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I mean, I'm trying to think, like, you know, if a video goes viral of, like, you know, there's a moose on the highway or whatever, they're like, you should do that. And we're like, all right.
But
it's already, that's the thing. It's already, yeah, the moose already did it. The moose beat us to the joke.
The highway is, there's a car on the highway. The satire is the moose.
So there is that. And then there's also, there's a lot of messages about that. And then there's also a lot of messages about, like you said, like, I can't believe you guys talked about that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and so sometimes being like, "Whoa, that's cool," and sometimes being like, "How dare you try and make fun of this issue?" Which, you know, is a fair perspective. Although my opinion is, as we've already said, like, but do you disagree with the point we made, or are you just mad that we would dare talk about this subject? Because if you say I'm offended you would ever talk about this subject, I say, okay, well, we just disagree there and we'll move on.
Right.
If you disagree with that, we went at something the wrong way or we ended up punching down or whatever, then totally fair criticism.
There's a lot of requests, please make fun of my town.
Yes.
Oh, I can imagine.
Oh, we get a lot
this
of emails.
This happens in my town. It needs to be pointed out.
We get a lot of emails from Beaverton, Ontario. and I don't mean people in Beaverton. I mean the city of Beaverton, Ontario. City officials email us probably once a month like, would you guys like to film here? And I'm like, I don't know, what do you got? And they're like, I mean, our name's Beaverton. And I'm like, yep.
Yep.
So we're just like, we'll film by the sign, and Emma will just be there. And like, what's your plan? And they're like, I don't know.
We're Sudbury people.
Roll.
We're Sudbury and Hamilton people.
Have you ever had torn the mickey out of somebody pretty badly, which you guys have done, and then met that person?
Oh.
Yeah.
Is it right now?
Yes.
No.
No. Mine was pretty benign. You save your ire for my post-media overlords, so you know I'm fine with that.
I have met Ezra once, I think.
Oh,
and,
yeah?
And yeah, I mean, we, you know.
Did you guys fight?
No, I mean, spaghetti and wine.
It was a very passing thing, and I, you know, I mean, there was no awkwardness to it, because with that, it's so transparent. He hates us and we hate him. Like, it's very clear.
So it's,
there's nothing to say. It's
exactly.
Not like anything where we got to pretend to be friends.
Yeah.
But there's some people, there's some people we've just made offhand jokes about, like, you know, just celebrities that were just like, you know, this is a funny thing. And then we meet them and it's like, and you can tell they did not like it. But the one, and you know, he always gets so much love, so why add more? But Chris Hadfield, who, we wrote two articles, we've written two articles about Chris Hadfield, both of which have gone viral around the world.
Yeah.
And so, like,
and
you
in
know,
space.
Yes. So we wrote one about him years ago, about him when he came back from space, about because he was, you know, tweeting and YouTubing the whole time that his Rogers data bill was like through the roof or whatever. Like, silly little joke, whatever. And we were like, haha, that'll be funny. And then, you know, it's like, hey, 3 million people have read that in China. And you're like, what? And so it just went viral. And we met his son first. And his son told us, yeah, every time he does a book tour, someone still comes up to him and says, I'm so sorry about your phone bill. And like, not just in Canada, anywhere. So when I met him, I was very apprehensive. I was like, I'm really sorry. I didn't mean to cause you, you know, like, you're literally Canada's fun grandpa. Like, no one's taking the piss out of Chris Hadfield. We just thought it was funny. And he's like, look, man, I get it. It's no problem. Like, and he was just so cool about it. And he was exactly as Chris Hadfield as you would want him to be.
Yep. Either of you?
Lloyd Robertson mispronounced my name.
Local Canadian celebrities now?
I don't know about that.
Lloyd Robertson, we did a show together.
This was the best day of my life.
And Lloyd Robertson, who we've talked about, I suppose, in random things somehow, we met him and he did not know who we are, to the point where he was the one introducing us and he said, please welcome Emma Hunter and Miguel Riviera.
I don't know. You know, he just didn't give a shit.
So, in answer to your question, I feel like we should take a strong dig at Lloyd Robertson.
Breaking news, Lloyd Robertson's still alive. Who knew?
That's a pretty strong dig, I'd say.
Still being live streamed, just pro tip.
Oh, is he watching? Come on.
He's here!
He may be. There is a lot more questions that I could ask you guys, but I want to afford our wonderful audience that came here on a cold Monday night the opportunity to come up to the microphone to participate in this discussion with Luke, Emma, and Miguel. So please feel free to go to the mic and just let us know your name and your affiliation and how you found yourself here tonight at JTalk.
Perfect.
That's great.
Welcome, Neil.
So I have two questions. The first question is about going with a TV show as opposed to a web series. A lot of comedians are putting their stuff directly on the internet. Why didn't you guys just produce a web-only series? How did it come to be a TV show on a mainstream network? So that's my first question. And what's the pros and cons of doing that? Second question is, it seems to me like a lot of Canadian comedy television is very middle of the road, very safe, in some cases very hokey. Why has it taken so long for a very contemporary style young show like yours to get on the air?
I love you.
Luke, I think you probably might want to tackle that first part of the question.
Sure, yeah. I mean, I don't know. At first I thought you were just trying to plug CBC Comedy's website.
Why don't you want to do a web series instead of a television show?
It's a great question because you're right. There is so many wonderful web series being made and not just through CBC, obviously, but there's so many great ones that it is a very valid question. It seems like a funny thing, but it's a very valid concern, especially in other countries. I would think this kind of voice couldn't get on, like you said, mainstream Canadian TV, so you'd have to go to the web in order to keep the biting satirical component that was so important for us. The real answer to your question, besides the obvious answer of like, well, you know, money and everything else, is that because Bell Media was so cool with us keeping our voice and not changing it and not diluting it and not becoming middle of the road, we had no concerns about going to TV. And obviously we're on Comedy Network at 10 o'clock and that's not like being on CBC at 8 p.m. Like there's a different audience there and you're past the hour where you can swear and everything else to it. So, you know, kind of our comfort level with the executives and with Bell Media's vision for the show is really what allowed us to be confident that we could keep doing what we wanted to do even, you know, on TV.
And the second part of the question, either of you want to
I have a few opinions about that because I think it's something when you grow up where you're like, I don't like Canadian TV is sort of like a popular opinion when you want to get into the industry because I want to change it and do it better. I think like a really simple answer might be the internet and connectivity in general. Canada is a huge country, but a sparsely populated country, and viewership numbers you would have to rely on in terms of being competitive with American production values and financing, would have to generate similar numbers. And to do that, you have to appeal to all of Canada, which, as we're all aware, is many different regions with many different personalities and interests. And when, you know, when you make something for everybody, in most cases in art, it's terrible if that's your goal. Right. You want to make it good, or you want to make, you want to say something. You don't, I want to make this so that everybody likes it is almost always a recipe for failure. And I think that a lot of Canadian TV has been trapped in that being a financial necessity. And while it's still true to some degree, we can hear back from people more through social media and through the internet that we can understand that there is niche availability. The shows that we really like in the States beyond the big network shows like Grey's Anatomy or whatever, something in common that they all have. Well, not me, but other people. Oh. It's been on TV a long time. I thought it was a good...
No.
Go with the Good Place.
Good Place. That's a good one. Good Wife. That's a good show.
What's happening?
I think that they, I think that those shows have a niche, and they can appeal to a more specific crowd, and I think that's something that Canada is starting to do, and it yields, it's turning out to be yielding massive results, I think, rather than making things generic.
Yeah, or a more cynical perspective would be that I think sometimes a country, which I love very much, if the model hasn't been proven, they don't want to take the risk because there's less money and less people. But I think that historically has been something that we can do better at. That might be why it took so long.
Yeah, and credit also to CBC for giving shows like Baroness and Crawford, which are not obviously broad appeal shows and are very specific and unique to the creators' voices, a slot, because that's a huge part of what's kind of driving this current Canadian TV moment along.
But mainly kudos to Bell.
Yeah. Did I not already suck up enough?
Yeah, suck up to Bell. Is there anyone in particular, Bell, you need to suck up to?
Bill, Sarah.
Let's name them off.
Love you. Yeah.
Randy Lennox, he's a great guy.
Yeah, great guy.
Visionary.
Yeah.
Great discussion, guys. My name's Dale. I'm down here from Peterborough. Got tickets on Twitter, so
that's
great. Cool. Cool. So, Dale from Peterborough.
So we started off the night talking about the fact that it's a one-week show. Like, the website has the advantage of being a little bit more reflective and can get watch the story and watch it evolve. Louis C.K. said, 9/11 jokes. Miguel talking about you can make a joke about anything. He said 9/11 jokes, they didn't wait till 9/12 to write the jokes. They wrote them on 9/11. They didn't do them on 9/11. And I'm just wondering, are there stories that you're watching now that, like, we've written the jokes, but we can't do the jokes yet? You know, that kind of...
Well, there's,
or does that happen without getting specific, maybe into a story? But does that happen? We've got the jokes, but we can't do that this week.
Mm-hmm. The one that died that I skipped over giving the specifics for, which I'll give now to answer this question, the one that I did on the floor where I was like, "Don't make me do it again," was the anniversary of the mosque shooting recently, and so it's obviously a very prominent news story, and we made a story that sort of referenced. The Quebec government's decision making around certain areas relating to Islam, as it related to the anniversary.
Yeah, with the niqab ban.
And I've never felt the comedic phrase "too soon" so deeply in my bones as I did taping that episode. So, that was one that we didn't put on air. That I'm glad we didn't put on air. Luke would know.
Well, I mean, I think it's. Dylan. I think it's. I generally like to have the perspective of hindsight. I find, to that idea of, writing jokes on the day it's happening, I find those aren't the best jokes because if you don't know the whole story, then odds are you're just kind of cutting a slice off and looking at it like that, which can work for one or two jokes, but, from a broader wanting to tell a minute or a minute long story or a minute and a half long story on it, kind of dries up a little bit because it feels like you're not covering the whole world. And, I think those jokes are great for shock value, which I think I've already indicated I like a little bit, but they have to be combined with, shock value has to be combined with making a valid point and everything else we want to accomplish. It can't just be shock value for shock value's sake. So that's where I generally fall on it. I don't really have pre-written jokes that I wait a week to release. Sometimes we'll have a joke and we'll wait a day or two just to let things settle. I mean, we did do a piece on the website about the trial in Saskatchewan, but we didn't release it the day the verdict came out. We waited a day or two.
You did.
Yeah. We also just need many jokes on the TV show that it's not really like putting them here and there.
Yeah.
And being like, it'll be like, oh man, as soon as the show ends, it's so weird. We tape on Monday night, you're like, wow, that's such an accomplishment. Our first read is at 10 the next morning. You're like, okay, I guess there's no such thing as a weekend or like.
Yeah, yeah.
Great answers. Next question, please.
Oh, thank you, Adrian. Great job. And I was just going to say, I get really mad when people make fun of Winnipeg because I lived there for 11 years.
Oh, we are so dumb!
Don't watch our show.
Yeah, don't.
I was actually going to say the Beaverton is the one outlet where when they make fun of it, I cry laughing, and people in Winnipeg cry laughing because you do such a pitch perfect job of doing it. There's so many great Winnipeg stories. So thank you. My question. Partially joking, partially serious. What is your favorite story, each of you, that you've done so far? And then what are the lessons that you think serious journalists can take from the journalism that you do? Thank you.
Question. Who wants to tackle that one first?
Yeah.
There was a joke.
Talk now.
There was a joke. It wasn't a story. It was a joke. And Luke, you have to help me. I couldn't get through it. I was really embarrassing.
You were really close.
Stupid,
this recently?
But it was like mascots. Remember? It was like mascots. We're expected to punch them in the face and watch them fall over. But personal caregivers should not. Remember?
It was so stupid.
A nurse to like a mascot.
Yeah,
it was so good. And I couldn't say it. I couldn't say it. I love just the dumb stuff. And it was dumb and beautiful. Where did she go, that lovely person? Yeah, that made me happy.
We both love all the dumb stuff so much, just because. We talk about so many serious issues, and like I said, there's 18 issues dealt with per episode that you have to have a couple that are just pure stupidity.
Yeah, just to keep a little light.
It ourselves. Little.
Have you been to Winnipeg?
It's a dump! No, I'm just kidding.
It's a great city. I also lived in Winnipeg.
But I think if we can give any kind of lesson to real journalists, specifically TV journalists for me and Emma, I would say, Be self-aware and don't take yourself too seriously, because we're all aware that there's a news speak, a way to talk when you're a news anchor, but it can remove humanity so much sometimes, depending on what you're talking about. And our show, unlike most other late night comedy satirical news shows, it's not me going up there, even though we are using our real names, it's not being like, can you believe this? Like, we still present as newscasters, which is actually pretty rare. For what's on TV now, and I hope that satirical angle can hit with any real news anchors who might watch
the
show.
And it's the medium you're presenting in. You know, it's different in print, different in radio, very different visually in TV.
And I just want to say that I, having done this now, feel, first of all, no responsibility to give them any tips, because I think it's so different than what we actually do, and that I have a huge amount of respect for navigating a teleprompter while something is happening. Because if we make a mistake, what's nice if we trip on our words, there's a blah, which happens in real life all the time. Mm-hmm. It's a joke, so we're protected by this thing. If there's, you know, forest fires happening and you're navigating it, a blip can seem really disrespectful. So there's this immense amount of pressure. And I just, after, you know, doing this for 2 seasons, I just, hats off to those guys. It's a huge responsibility, and they're so good at it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Not like Miguel, who's just not incompetent.
Well, he didn't get chosen to co-host with you. So
no,
this
week.
You stashed me on the boozy night.
Get him.
On the boozy night when Lloyd Robertson's going to be there. Oh, my God.
Luke, did you want to weigh in at all on that?
Sure. Just quickly on the favorite story, we did a point counterpoint with Evan Miguel, which is often how we ended the show, right when Jagmeet Singh was chosen. And it was about how Quebec, you know, was seen as being a huge stumbling block to NDP's elections chances because they weren't comfortable with a visible minority wearing a turban as a prime minister. And, you know, so the whole point counterpoint was like, should Jagmeet Singh himself just become racist to fit in with Quebec? Which is like a very, you know, like that kind of punches you in the face. And it was such a great joke. But we were also setting up the subversion at the end, which was, because the story was, the headline that got attention was, whatever it was, I'm not going to get the number right, 70% of Quebecois were uncomfortable with a visible minority wearing a turban as prime minister. But buried in that same story that came out was that I think like 52% of English Canadians were also uncomfortable with it. So we were just sitting there reveling in the smugness of like, oh, these racist, you know, French Canadians. And then at the end, Emma, as she so wonderfully does, turned it on Miguel and pointed that out. And we ended it with kind of, well, I guess then can Jagmeet Singh be racist enough to win English Canada too? And it was just kind of a wonderful subversion of, again, Canadian smugness, and in that case, English Canadian smugness about, well, we're so diverse, but oh yeah, Quebecois are a little backwards in that regard. So that was my favorite story we did this year, I think. To the journalist question, yeah, I mean, it's not really a tip, it's more of just like kind of building on what we were talking about earlier, which is just that it's so important for our show, because of our format, we're not, here's the news, here's our joke about it. we're just, here's the news and that's our joke. So if we're commenting on something real that really happened and not just doing a silly local man or, you know, Winnipeg's a dumb story, if we're commenting on a piece of news that actually just happened, is we need people to know that news in order to get the joke, because we don't have time to explain it. Right. So it's just kind of so vital for our comedy, which is obviously the most important thing, that people know the news. Mm-hmm. So we just kind of need you guys to keep being very good at your job so that people see and know the news and the world around them so they can understand our jokes. Well, and, you know, like the world around them, but mostly our jokes.
Has it ever surprised you that some of your real news satire has made it into mainstream media?
I think
an editorial? Not mine. An editorial quoted you or one of your stories.
Oh, yeah.
Understanding it or when people are confused?
When they think it's real.
When they thought it was real.
When they think it's real,
did
is
you
like.
Know this?
I do, and it's a sort of depressing, right? And it's sort of the era we live in. I think people are going to look back on this era as a deeply propagandist era where we were struggling with technology to figure out how to disseminate and consume information. Mm-hmm. And so whenever that happens, sometimes it's like, really? Like, you really? Yeah. How could you believe that? So instead of being like, I mean, maybe Luke feels differently, but instead of being like, yes, I'm always like shocked when people think it's true.
Yeah, that was quite something. There's a couple more questions, I believe.
Hello, guys. Great chat so far. My name's Simon. I came in here because I heard people talking.
You got a new writer for the show.
I've heard a lot of references to Saturday Night Live, to Colbert Show, to The Daily Show, and to me, like, you guys have spiritual roots with The Onion, and mm-hmm. I haven't really heard any reference mm-hmm. to that yet. I'd love to hear you guys comment about that influence, but also more specifically, like, on Colbert and Daily Show, you have a fake person in a real world situation, sort of like Borat does that too. Mm-hmm. Whereas The Onion has this horrible meta world of The Onion that's similar to ours, and they sort of comment on themes there. And I think that's sort of what makes your stuff evergreen and really, really, it's more like laughing to sadness. Mm-hmm. Whereas Daily Show, I always found I was taken from sadness to laughter. And I don't know if you can comment on any of that ramble.
That's a very good point.
Huh? No, it was all, yeah. 100%. I mean, obviously, the website especially is, you know, not just inspired by The Onion, but kind of, you know, a ripoff of The Onion, really.
what?
we looked at what The Onion was doing and obviously wanted, and you know, we're kind of shocked because The Onion, as I'm sure everyone knows, has been around since literally the 1980s in one form or another, and it kind of became itself in the early to mid 90s and blew up in the 2000s. And so when we kind of were talking about what we wanted to do, I mean, I was personally shocked there wasn't a Canadian equivalent. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there are equivalents in pretty much, there were equivalents already in pretty much every English-speaking country and many non-English-speaking countries, but for whatever reason, Canada hadn't had one yet. So that was our direct inspiration and everything else when we first started. When we came to doing the TV show, I'm not sure if you watched The Onion's TV show, specifically the one on IFC, not the sports one so much. There were a lot of strengths there, but I did feel that because it was so removed from the world we lived in, is that there'd be such great jokes, and it was such a great show in many ways, but it did feel like it was so removed from the world we lived in that after 5 minutes or so, I kind of checked out because it no longer had that connection for me that The Daily Show and Colbert Report did, because they were talking about things that I lived and heard. Mm-hmm. So that was where, you know, again, not to in any way, you know, besmirch The Onion, but I did feel we could learn from The Onion show in that way by not quite being as abstract as they were from the world around them. And I think they, I could be wrong here, I think they did have a similar shooting schedule as we did in season one, which was they block shot everything and just released it the way you would a sitcom as opposed to a current event show. So that made it difficult for them to keep up with the Colberts and the Daily Shows because they couldn't comment on, you know, like what George Bush did that week or whatever the case was, or I think it was Barack Obama by the time the show came around. So that was an interesting lesson in its own way as well.
I think as a performer too, a reference point that I always drew back to is Chris Morris, who did a show called The Day Today in the 90s in England. And that show is presented similarly where they don't actually ever break the fourth wall. Mm-hmm. But unlike The Onion, they're commenting on real things that are happening and going very absurd after presenting a real nugget of information. So that's what I would look at for my reference point for the show.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm I'm an actress, and I went to a. I was an actor when I was young. I did a classical theater, and so for me, it's straight mimicking. For me, I wanted to seem as much like an authentic newscaster as possible, and almost ignore the jokes. So instead of like a stereotypical way a stand-up delivers or builds, I just like plow through it, and that way, the that's my favorite way that a joke lands in this world, and I'm just exceptional.
What do you want to know? The confidence to end a sentence with, yeah, I'm just exceptional.
What do you want to know? What do you want to know?
So we have time for our last two in line for questions. So please go ahead.
A little short for this. Okay. Hi, I'm Victoria. I'm a U of T student, and I also won tickets on Twitter.
Hey. Victoria! Youth and academia, welcome!
Yeah, so my first question is, what does your audience look like in terms of the show, the website? Is there a difference? And then also, all of you have spoken a lot about puncturing our bubble, and I was wondering if or how satire can shift or affect the dominant kind of narrative of what our Canadian national identity is, or if you think you're just kind of preaching to the choir.
Okay,
that's a lot to tackle. Maybe we are.
Who wants to play first?
Lukey.
Look at how uncomfortable Lukey is grabbing his.
No, I. Don't read my body language.
this is audio only. Okay, this is my website.
Still being live streamed.
Yeah. To your first question, I mean, what's interesting is in this day of knowing everything is I'm going to be honest, I don't fully know the answer to your question. I mean, with the website, I know a little bit more because, you know, Google and Facebook data mine all of us, so they give me that information, so I'll buy more advertising from them. But I know that in general speak, probably the people who are watching the TV show are a little bit, like on Wednesday nights at 10, are a little bit older than the people going to the website because a lot of people under 30 don't have cable, or if they do, they don't have specialty channels like the Comedy Network. So there's a bit of an age difference there. I think it's not that much, but there's somewhat of an age difference there. I think, especially when we first started, our biggest audience on the website were university students. And I think that's certainly grown as the website has grown. Because we started as a Toronto-centric website, I think we do have a bit of a Toronto-centric audience, but you know, every time we do a story about Winnipeg or anywhere else, it kind of expands beyond that. So
it's a dump.
Just want to be clear. And to your other question, which is a wonderful point and something I think about a lot, but I don't know if I have an answer to, about whether we can actually change people's minds with satire or just speak to the converted already. I think you can. I just don't think it happens all at once. It's a very slow process. But even more than changing someone's mind, which is, you know, they've done so many studies recently about how difficult that is, and once people set their opinion that presenting contradictory facts only cements it. One thing you can do is if you're speaking to someone who hasn't made up their mind on an issue or just doesn't know about an issue, that's one of the things that I love doing on the show is shedding light on something that isn't front page news. Mm-hmm. We, especially in season one, took a lot of pride in doing bigger stories on things that at the time no one was talking about. And some of them we were a little prescient on because they became very big stories, like veterans' rights and the fact that, you know, both the Harper government and the Trudeau government had essentially abandoned their commitments to Canada's veterans, which has become a very big talking point since, of course, that the town hall video blew up. But at the time was something that really wasn't making any news. So we took a lot of pride in shedding light on stories. And whether we changed people's minds or cemented their opinion, at the very least they would know about something and they would see our maybe twisted comedic take on it. But they would at least realize that this is an issue that wasn't necessarily front page news or making the rounds on social media or whatever it was.
And part of it, though, I think, is like taking a serious issue, making fun of it, and then that's make it memorable for people. Mm-hmm.
I think that's
then
right.
Then it's relatable.
Yeah, and yeah. I think, there's a lot of issues that comedy shows won't cover because they're trying to bring some levity to what can be a dark day of news.
Sure.
And I think we distinctly don't do that. So, we hope that there's a laugh, but we're not going to not say the issue. That's the whole thing. And I think that's the big thing with Me Too. It's the big thing with Indigenous rights. It's the whole issue with people of color being represented. We just, if we don't talk about it, it's not there, la, la, la. And I think we... as much as, we're two white faces, we're still trying to talk about the issues that some comedy shows will distinctly avoid because it's just going to bring down the room, so to speak. Okay. So you can. Yes.
But we also air twice. We air on Wednesday night on Comedy Network at 10. We also air on CTV on Sunday nights. And CTV is a channel that a lot of people just get, and they put it on and they watch what happens on that channel. And so if we have an opportunity to be seen by those people, which we have been this season, I do think there's a little bit more of a crossover element to people who aren't searching out the Beaverton specifically.
Mm-hmm. All right, last question.
Hi, my name is Aaron, and I'm one of the writers on the Beaverton.
I was wondering if we were going to pretend we're not there.
No, you're just like, what's the bit? I was just here because I heard it was catered.
Who's this guy?
Yeah, who's this guy? My question actually is to Adrian Batra.
Ooh.
It's about time.
I know.
Right?
I'm actually, I want to express my disappointment in your professionalism. I was really hoping you would just come in here with this chip on your shoulder and like just like skewer these three guys for their lefty propaganda. But when the Beaverton was first sort of coming into its own, Rob Ford, your former boss, was one of our favorite targets. I'll just read a few of the.
Don't do it.
We're almost, everything's going nice. There's a bar. What are you doing?
Well,
you
come
know you're cutting
see
into
me
our
afterwards.
Drinking time.
I know. Yeah, right?
Send them, you know what? Tweet them.
Tweet them.
We'll tweet them later. No, I'm actually just curious as to what you thought of the publication while working there.
So I left the mayor's office in 2011. Mm. So I'm pre-crack, as I like to say.
Allegedly.
Yeah,
crack way back.
Because he just started after.
That was 2013. He had a couple of years to move up to where
and
he
was. And if only you stayed.
How I would answer that question. Being a political staffer and living in the world in which we were living in, like the fucking elevator at City Hall had its own goddamn Twitter account, and CNN and Fox News had a live broadcast on this elevator. It was living almost like living in satire. It was insane. But for those friends of mine and my colleagues that were in there in the office at the time going through all of that and that were like duck marched out of the City Hall with CNN following them to the parking lot and their poor things, like their poor mothers like texting them like, oh my God, Brian, you're on CNN and not for a good reason, you know? Like, literally like being perp walked out of the city for nothing but other than quitting the mayor's office. You know, I spoke to a lot of them and I'm going to be very blunt. No one paid attention to that. No one paid attention to the hilarity part of it. So, with all due respect,
should have been there.
You didn't know the tiny website that just started that was years away from being on television.
It didn't have an impact. And that's
fair
as
enough.
Candid as I can
totally
be.
Totally fair. Totally fair. You must have some very interesting stories.
So
it was never dull.
In conclusion, eat shit, Aaron.
Yeah, eat shit, Aaron. Thank you very much for the question. And thank you three for an amazing discussion. Thank you. And thank you, audience.
The entire audience, I'd like to thank the Beaverton for joining us tonight and for shining a spotlight on the good, the bad, and the ugly of our cultural and political landscape. So thank you and look forward to next season. Round of applause for the Beaverton.
Thanks
for having us. And to our dynamite moderator, Adrian Batra, for the work she put into making this a timely, inspirited, and relevant discussion. I think Adrian deserves a round of applause.
Thank you so much.
Okay, before we open the bar, I have a preview of an upcoming CJF event. On March 6th, in the lead up to International Women's Day, we are joined by three of this country's top investigative journalists.
Oh.
They are all fearless and fabulous women. Robin Doolittle, Tanya Talega, and Connie Walker will join us to share their stories behind the stories, the important work they did last year. And the talk is moderated by Matt Galloway. And the deadline for the Canadian Journalism Foundation Awards is fast approaching. You have a few more days. We have awards for excellence, lifetime achievement, media literacy, and some great fellowships for young journalists and investigative journalism. So check out our website and apply today. And finally, thanks to all of you for joining us and for supporting the work of the CJF. It's my pleasure to invite you to join us for a cocktail and continue the conversation with the Beaverton. Thanks, folks.
Just you get to have a woman?